Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and I'm very honored today to be down in South Georgia. I'm at Camden County High School in Kingsland, Georgia, and I am sitting next to the great Coach Dan Vonk, one of the greatest developers of talent in the rural areas that I have ever met, in the high school as well. And we've got a great show for you today. We've got Coach Bob McKinley. Are you on the line?
I am, Chuck.
Bob, thanks for holding. I did the mad dash down the interstate here to get to see Coach Vonk, and he got me all set up in his office here to do the show. So we're going to bring him on a little bit later, too, and talk about rural tennis and talk about that great high school program that you have going in Texas. It's known as the best one that there is for developing talent. So, man, I really appreciate your time, though. I hope it slowed down here a little bit after the NCAAs.
You know, yeah, so thanks it was for a whirlwind on, there. It was a whirlwind for a few weeks, but now
You only get a few weeks off. I remember the days well. But anyhow, folks, this is the UR Tennis Network. I'm Coach Chuck Griese. This is the American Tennis Show. And I'm proud to say this is our 52nd show. We've now been on the air for a year. And by golly, we really have a mission here to try to attack every situation that we can that will help put American tennis back on top. Our mission is to stand up and to speak out and, daggone it, to say the things that don't get said anywhere else. You know, Bob, all those things that people want to say but they sort of hold back. We're not too much into political correctness, folks, on the American tennis program. Actually, we had Jerry Simmons on last week, Bobby, and I told him that I brought him on particularly so that people wouldn't think that I was getting soft on the political correct front and everything. But having you on here this week is a great one. But our mission is to get everybody to stand up and speak out. We just ask you to stay professional. Address issues, not people, and nobody, no man can find fault with that. Edmund Burke's one of my favorite quotes, that one of the favorite quotes I've ever known is Edmund Burke's, and he says, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. And Bobby, my mama used to say that a squeaky wheel will get the oil, son, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. and along with a lot of her sayings as I'd walk out the door every day. If you want to call in, though, it's 714-583-6853. That's area code 714-583-6853. You can get all the shows on the UR Tennis Network by going to your iTunes app on your iPhones, and you can just go to UR Tennis on your iPod and you get everything from the last year. Golly, we've got a great show on every week about tennis in America. My website is chuckcreasy.net, and go there. You've got all my total tennis training camps from my 38th summer. I'm so proud. Coach McKinley, I've had over 14,000 children come through my camps. We also have a thing called T3 mentorship programs where you can look at my blogs and things as well and see what I've been up to. Coach Bob McKinley, daggone it, what haven't you done in tennis? And I want to talk about the last 50 years after we go to a commercial here, but I'm just going to read you folks a little bit about Bob. And I always knew Bob McKinley because he was my age. I know exactly. You and I were the same age. I didn't make Kalamazoo, though, Bob, and you won Kalamazoo in 1968. As a junior player growing up in St. Louis, you had the great Bill Price that helped your brother Chuck. Chuck was a Wimbledon champion, and we're going to really try to talk about some of the things he did today. Bob, you know, in ATP, you got up to the top 50 as a professional, but your main thing that you are remembered for is the great years at Trinity University, not just as a player. And in 1972, you, Brian Gottfried, Dick Stockton, Paul Gherkin, Pancho Wathol, right?
That's right.
And who else was on that tournament, that team?
Sixth guy was a guy named John Berman from California.
Right, and you guys won the NCAA in 1972, and we had a tribute to the great Coach Clarence Mabry. And, folks, this is the way it works a lot of times with sports, and a generation comes and goes, and we really need to talk about the history of our great sport. But from 1957 to 1977, Trinity University was ranked in the top five in the United States. That's USA Collegiate. And between number one and five, 18 out of those 20 years. Coach McKinley, you went on to coach there. You were a four-time All-American. You were NCAA Coach of the Year. And, golly, you know, the match I will always remember is the match in 79. I was standing on the side of the court there, and we'll get a chance to talk about it as well. But anyhow, Bob, we've got to go to a commercial here. You know, we're just really lucky to have you on, and thanks. Folks, tune in, stay tuned in here for Bob McKinley and American Tennis.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Bob McKinley, you were definitely made in America, and you've had a lot to do with the American tennis, and you've seen the greatest days of American tennis and some of the not-so-great days of American tennis, but you were definitely made in American tennis. And it started at home, I'm sure. I wanted to just ask you, Bob, did your mom have any of those sayings like squeaky wheel gets the oil, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed? Or was it just my mom? Did your mom have any of those?
I'm sure she did, but I don't remember them the way that you do. And but I love hearing, you know, some of your little witticisms, because they're right on target and they're priceless.
Bob, I don't know. I think that's the only way I could remember things, but my mother would hit me with things. One of them was, you love this one, soap is cheap, books are free, never be dirty or dumb, son. Okay? she would say,
I would have loved to have met her.
Every day we'd walk out the door, she'd say, son, don't take any wooden nickels. You know, we'd go, what? What's she talking about? No. And things like, love many, trust few, paddle your own canoe. But these are loaded language things that we use, and I've always used them in coaching, and they sort of just stick, and they help you remember things. But, Bob, you were raised in St. Louis, and I'd love for you to – we're going to get to Texas A&M so you can talk about A&M season and watch your – program is about and your long-term goals, but could you take us back to those days? When did you start playing tennis? You were born in 1950, probably.
I was.
And when did you start playing tennis and how there? In the late 50s?
As you mentioned earlier, my brother was Wimbledon champion, and he was 9 years older than I was. So, you know, he was kind of my hero, and I looked up to him, and I – you know, played around with the tennis racket ever since I can remember. But I really started playing and taking it seriously when I was about 9 years old. And that was the time that he was beginning to do extremely well. He was 18 at that point, and so it really motivated me to go forward with my tennis.
But Bob, what were things like in 1959? I mean, I actually started in 63. I was 13 years old at the park. But talk about that a little bit. I mean, just getting started. He was already, you know, he was a Wimbledon champion. So you wanted to do it, and you went to a fellow named Bill Price there in St. Louis.
Yeah, and the whole Bill Price story is so unique with my brother, because that's where it all started. Bill Price was a world champion ping pong player. And he had a theory that if you taught someone to play ping pong with the proper strokes, that you could take those strokes onto a tennis court and simply elongate them and almost immediately become a pretty good tennis player. And he did that with my brother, and then he did it with me, and he did it with many other players that he worked with. And it really was an amazing theory, because we understood the spins, we understood the path that the racket would need to take in order to hit the ball, and literally, you know, and we didn't play tennis during this time. We played ping pong, ping pong, ping pong, and then
for how long?
Graduated.
How long did you just play ping pong?
You know, I want to say that, you know, I played for a couple of years before I ever played tennis. And I think my brother, maybe a little less, maybe a year or so. And then you walked out onto the tennis court and you immediately, you know, could hit the ball and hit it, you know, fairly well. And, you know, I've never heard anyone approach the game quite like that. And, you know, it was kind of a unique theory at the time.
Well, Bob, I'm going somewhere with this, because, you know, now we have the green ball, red ball, orange ball, yellow ball, whatever the balls are. And this is USTA's putting all their money into this, and there's been under a lot of criticism. Some people are really, really into it and love it, and some people are just outraged. The Wayne Bryants, the Robert Lansdorps, the Vic Bradens, some of the older guys are saying, what in the world? It's not about a system or a cookie-cutter system of just doing this. And the USTA swears by it, as you know, because they say we're getting the numbers up of people entering the game. And my argument, Bob, is that it doesn't matter how many people you get to try the game, but what really matters is to get the hook in the mouth and get people to stay in the game. It's not about playing tennis. It's about becoming a tennis player. And here we go, a guy who developed world champions and had people play ping pong for a year. And any quick comments there? What are your thoughts?
Well, as you bring up what the USTA is doing, I mean, I think that part of what they're doing is great because, you know, it introduces, as you said, more people to the game, and those people, you know, whether they really become tennis players or not, accomplished tennis players, they at least have generated some interest in the game. They become fans. It's good for the sport. Grows the sport. All of that's good. Where I draw the line is when, like you said, when they dictate what a player must do, because this is the system that is going to work to develop players. And, as in my case, I developed through ping pong. I mean, some other guy might develop some other way. And there is no one right way or one best way. It's just about getting people involved and letting them take the path that best suits them. And I think this new system is actually retarding the progress of our players.
Here's why is because you can introduce a system, but it's not about the system. It's about relationships, and it's about affairs of the heart. Tennis is not a sports science. I will always argue this. It's an affair of the heart. It's an art form. You've got to get people to fall in love with it. And I don't care how many things I try. You know, you might try 50 things, and, you know, you become somewhat of a fan. But the point is, until a person invests themselves in it, that really is not going to stick. And that's where I think they're missing the boat. I'm really sold on this guy out, Aaron Fox, and Sam, what is his name out there, Cigarelli, whatever, the guy out there in California do these GRIPS program. And the difference, these GRIPS programs, it's gripsprogram.com. Bob, they're like karate belts, and they've got different colors. And the reason I like them is because kids can't – it's a self-incentivizing program where kids – jump in, and they want to get the next grip color, and they want to get the next grip color. You know how karate works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it really, really works, folks. Craig Cigarelli is the guy. But these guys came up with this. But look at it, folks. This is really, really good. And if you use that with the USTA program, it might be good. Bob, where I draw the line is when they mandated these tournaments, said you have to do this. And I told them, by golly, even when they invented sliced bread, you still had a choice whether to slice your own or not. And we had Dr. Mike Kernodle on a few weeks ago. Bob, you know Mike. He played at North Carolina, and he's a PhD in kinesiology and a brilliant guy. He's up in Appalachian State. But he brought up the point that would Skip Fosbury have ever emerged if people had said, look, there's the bar, and you have to get over it this way. And what a good analogy, too. Look,
that is a great analogy.
USTA say, there's the bar. Folks, get over it any way you can. Here's the bar. Here's the incentive. So my point is, Bob, is that we don't need programs of anything cookie cutter or anything that is like this is the godsend. We need incentives. It's not the programs.
Yep.
It's incentives. Just tell us, go get it. And we've got so many fantastic coaches out there that would get this done. But, you know, anyhow, Bill Price, I wanted to talk about him and give him honor. Bob, talk about real quick about the 72. You went to Kalamazoo. You started playing junior tournaments. Can you talk about the junior tournaments and winning Kalamazoo just a minute or two, and then move on to your college days as well?
Well, I mean, junior tennis – at that time, it was our Mecca. I mean, Kalamazoo was something that you heard about from the time I was 9 years old. I mean, my brother had already played at Kalamazoo, and I'd heard all about it, and it's what a young player just, you know, strove for, to number one, have the chance to play at Kalamazoo, and then number two, you know, once you got there, you know, could you possibly win it? And it's one of the memories in tennis that I have that, you know, I probably will, I'll never forget it. It's one of my most vivid memories because it was something that I looked forward to for so long, and I luckily was able to get it done.
Yeah, and you beat, I think, semis? You beat Dick or quarters?
I did, semis.
You beat, it was quarterfinals, and now you played 3 out of 5 sets too, though, didn't you, back those days?
In the finals.
Finals.
Semis was still 2 out of 3, but the finals was 3 out of 5.
And no 10-minute break after the second set, so you could go get the water cooler from mom or dad, or to sit down and eat your Powerade and things and make sure that you weren't cramping after 2 tough sets in Michigan, right?
That's right.
I'm making fun here, but you know where I'm going with this.
Of course. And, you know, it was fitness was all part of it. You know, there were no tiebreakers then. You mentioned my match with Dick Stockton. The score in that match, it was just 2 out of 3, but the score was 10-8, 9-7. And it was a long match and, you know, no tiebreakers. So you had to be fit.
Yeah, and if you started cramping, lack of conditioning, you just lost, right?
Yeah, that was all part
of it. And, you know, and gosh, how much is this, the way that we are approaching it today, Bob, with making our kids, we're treating them like hothouse flowers. We're so afraid that they might get hot and so afraid that it's just awful. And the point is that aren't we self-sabotaging our own kids and making them soft like we are?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, of course, when you get to the college level as a coach, you know, you're experiencing this because you're trying to make these kids tougher, but you're facing years of where they're being told the opposite, and it's pretty tough to change that mold.
It's really frustrating. I talked to a coach the other day, an Ivy League coach, and he was saying, yes, Coach Creasy, but back when you were coaching and you did all these tough things with your players, but, you know, Dick Gould was winning, and he wasn't doing it quite that way. He was more into the intellectual side and everything as well. It's different for everybody. And again, it's just like, hey, there's the bar. I've always believed at Clemson we need to do certain things to get over the bar or to get in the arena. And we did. And Dick Gould did it his way. Bob McKinley did it his way at Trinity University. Dan McGill did it a certain way at Georgia. And that was the beauty of it, to see what recipe really worked. So I don't know. We just get a little bit too sophisticated, I think. And you know, too many computers and too many systems, probably, in a way. Hey,
sure.
Bob, so Kalamazoo, you won in 68, and then that opened up a lot of things. What a recruiting class, though. You, Dick Stockton, Brian Gottfried came, I think, a year after, though. Wasn't
he did.
A year?
Yeah, he came later. Paul Gerken actually came. He was in our same class, but he went to Stanford first and then transferred to Trinity. So, you know, we ended up with 4, you know, top players and top 50 players in the world. But that first class was just Dick Stockton, myself, and Pancho Walthall.
Well, talk about playing there, Trinity, and the challenges. What humps did you have to get over and things?
Well, you mentioned we won it in 72. We, you know, as a freshman year, we were third. Sophomore year, we were second. Junior year, we were second. And then we finally knocked the door down as seniors and got it done. But, you know, we had a group of guys that were really dedicated to wanting to become professional tennis players. And, you know, we really worked at it, worked hard at it. I mentioned when we did the show for Clarence about Brian and Dick kept a tally in their room. They were roommates, and they kept a tally in their room of all the sets that they had played against each other and who had won them. And I mean, it, you know, for the year it was 59-57. And they would go out and play. This is outside of practice. This was when they were done with class in the morning and they go out and play on their own. And that's the kind of team we had. I mean, where guys were just, they weren't satisfied with just, you know, putting in a couple hours a day. You know, we were putting in as much time as we could, and eventually it paid off with the national championship.
Yeah, Bob, times have changed so much. It's really very, very frustrating how everybody is so product-driven instead of process-driven. You guys looked at college as part of the process, part of the necessary process to get you to the pros. And we are dumbfounded, every person who is in leadership of coaching or anything right now in the United States, that we have so few players coming out of college now going into the pros. We're going to talk right after the commercial about the power leaks in American tennis, but I'm going to give you the first one. First power leak, Coach McKinley, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but in 1982, there were 42 Americans in the top 100 in USA tennis, in ATP tennis. There were 39 of those 42 had gone to college. 39 former NCAA player, collegiate players, go on to the Pro Tour and make top 100. Now, people could argue, well, that's before the Chinese or the Eastern Bloc countries got involved in all of this or that. But with all of the resources we have and all of the times that we've tried to put more emphasis on tennis and all of the systems and all of the programs, you'd think that we would have a little bit better than just one today. One player went to college and is in the top 100 of our American kids. On the men's side, that's John Isner. Do you know that it's been 20 years since a female broke into the top 100 who went to college and was a USA girl? That was Lisa Raymond. Well, we have a girl now, a Falcone girl, that played for Brian Shelton at Georgia Tech. I think she finally broke into the top 100. But, Bob, that's disgusting. Come on. I mean, what in the world are we doing with our talent just being falling through the cracks and being thrown out the window here? It's just awful. And anyone that would argue the contrary, you know, the proof is in the pudding. That's just awful. So it was a different time, as you say. People went to college and, my golly, 59-56, Stockton playing Gottfried. I bet those matches were intense to watch.
They were fun. They were really fun. And home at the end of the day and, you know, be best friends. So it was awesome.
Well, Bob, we've got Coach Dan Vonk here with us. Coach Dan, you want to say hi to Coach McKinley?
How you doing, Coach McKinley?
I'm great. How are you?
Great.
And I'll give you a good one. Coach Vonk is the kind of man that brought me in. I did a high school coaches workshop for my total tennis training certification program. He brought in 25 coaches from his surrounding area, his competition, to just try to get more interest going. But he's in South Georgia here, pretty close to the state line of Florida. And he's got a lot going on with the rural tennis here, but we'll have him on to talk in a few minutes. Let's go to commercial, Bob. We'll be right back.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike Tennis Camps and take your game to the next level.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I'm back with American Tennis, and we have Coach Bob McKinley today with us. And Coach McKinley, those are some fascinating things there. I don't know if there is a patented way to make a champion. I think that the champion makes the champion. What are we doing well, Bobby, and what are we doing poorly in the USA? And can you sort of take 4 or 5 minutes and just go through what you might do if you were in charge of the whole ball of wax?
Well, I'm not sure we're doing anything particularly well, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think there are coaches around the country in their areas that are doing a fantastic job of developing players. But I think as an overall country and organization, you know, I think we're doing, you know, we're doing a lot of things that are actually holding our players back and keeping them from being, you know, as good as they could be. You know, I think one thing that is severely lacking in this country is a competitive system that really encourages and helps players get the best players get together and play each other. And I think that happens even at the local level. I think it happens at the sectional level, and I think it happens at the national level, where we're just not getting our players enough competition. And you go back to the softness thing. I mean, I think we're teaching the kids that, oh, you can't play that many tournaments. You've got to, you know, you've got to pace yourself, and you know, and as a result, they're not getting enough. They're not getting enough competitive experiences. You know, when I was growing up, you mentioned the thing in St. Louis. St. Louis produced 7 players that were ranked in the top 10 in the world.
Oh my!
And they all came from the same era, boys and girls, men and women. But what those players did is they all got together on a daily basis and played each other. They weren't doing drills that somebody told them what to do. They were playing each other. They were playing matches. They were playing sets. And, you know, it's unbelievable what that city produced, you know, during that time period. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, that is how they developed, through the public parks and through this system. And now everything is so specialized, and, you know, people are doing great. I mean, we've got some of the best drillers in the world. But, you know, when it comes to playing, all of a sudden, you know, things are a little bit different. And I just wish we could, from the ground up, develop a system that encouraged our best players to play more and play against each other and put it all out there.
Bob, I use this loaded language quite often, that we don't need more systems, we need more incentives. We just need incentives. Set the bar, say, get over it. Get over the bar. Set the bar. Look, we need to win Davis Cup. American players, let's get over this. Now, I go back and talk about this all the time, that the USTA comes in and they put these systems in. One of the systems that they put in 7 or 8 years ago was this point system for tournaments. And one of the reasons I have Coach Dan Vonk here, besides him being so gracious and letting me use his setup, but he has been a victim in his programs. No, wait a minute. I don't want to talk about victimology. I'm not going to go there. But he has his program in South Georgia is sort of, if you want to play in the state of Georgia, you really have to go to Atlanta. It's about a three-hour drive from here. Five and a half hours. They can go to Jacksonville and play tournaments and get better. But the USTA put this point system in, Bobby, and I don't know if you are familiar with it, but what they do is they award points to certain tournaments. And let's say back at McFarland Tennis Center, if you wanted to have a tournament, a junior tournament, and you said, look, I'm going to try to bring in some of the better players in the country and play this tournament, and you got them all to come there as a tournament director in San Antonio, you would have to, first of all, get anointed by the USTA. They would have to say, look, we bequeath upon you so many points, and your tournament is this status, and therefore you're able to play at this level. Well, maybe they give you a level 3 or a level 5 or a level 2 tournament, and then you have all these great players there. Well, it doesn't matter that you have all the great players there. It's the tournaments that they anoint that get the most points. So are you with me? Were you aware of this?
I am aware of it. Absolutely.
You're aware. Okay, well, here's Coach Dan Vonk. I want you to tell him your story a little bit here, Coach.
Vonk, you know, it's just tough in rural areas. I get these kids and I get them excited about tennis. We run camps. We try to get them hooked. And then we send them to play in USTA tournaments. One of the problems that I have is there's a lack of tournaments in my area. When it requires an overnight trip, you have to have parents buying into it. You have a lot of added costs and everything. But the USTA doesn't have a lot of the higher level tournaments in my area. We have to drive, like Chuck said, several hours to go to them, and it's just hard to get the buy-in from the parents and everything else. We end up having a few kids that will chase the points, trying to get the points, and they're looking at their Georgia State rankings and trying to get those points, but it's just very difficult to find competitive playing opportunities. When my kids go to a tournament and they lose 0-0 to somebody in the first round, and then they're done, and then they go home, that's just one of the struggles that we have in rural areas. I know that Chuck has talked a lot about the system that Dave Fish is trying to promote as well, and we're looking at the what do they call it, Chuck?
The Universal Tennis Rating.
Yeah,
where everybody cross play with a lot of different groups that are like a 14-year-old boy could play a 21-year-old girl, could play a 40-year-old man, and it's all level based. And then, you know, Dave Fish has this. He and a guy named Dave Howe have a system together that I just think is brilliant. Where, and again, it's a system. Maybe we shouldn't even be trying to do that. People are just trying to figure out more and more ways for people to play. But you hear what Coach Vonk's saying, don't you, Bob? I mean, it's ridiculous. His kids, if he gets all this energy, gets 200 kids here in Camden County High School to come play, or Camden County, Georgia, it doesn't matter if he's got the best players in the country here. The tournament will be a L5 or something, so it's dead on arrival, and there's just no chance. That's not the way it should be. It should be done by the incentive of coaches like this right here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, exactly right, and that's, you know, in a different sort of way what I was referring to earlier. I mean, there's just not enough, you know, competition that will help to develop players, because it's all skewed, like you were saying, to this, you know, this point system, and instead of kids just getting out there and playing for playing's sake, you know, that, hey, I'm going to go play a tournament, you know, I'm excited, I want to play.
Give me some ideas then for like rural areas, some of the struggles that we have. What are some things that you think we should be doing in a rural area to give kids the most beneficial opportunities, to where they're not just chasing points at a level 5 tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had the answers. I unfortunately have never been in a rural area. You know, I've always been San Antonio, or now even where I am now, College Station is pretty close to Houston, so our kids can go to Houston an hour and a half away and get, you know, quite a lot of competitive opportunities. But, you know, I would hope that, you know, that it's sort of like Chuck saying we need to form our own coaches organization. You know, if some coaches got together, you know, in your area and sort of put on their own tournaments, now, is that going to gain those players anything tangible? Like, is it going to get them a Georgia ranking or so on? No, probably not, unless, you know, something could really change. But if there were some coaches who got together to organize some tournaments for the kids, at least they're getting those playing opportunities that is going to make them a better tennis player. And, you know, you mentioned a minute ago that it's hard to get the parents to buy in to travel and, you know, maybe they get one match, maybe they get two. I mean, if, you know, there are other tournament formats where, you know, a player can be guaranteed three or four matches in a weekend, no matter how he does. And, you know, to me, it's all about playing opportunities. And the cream will rise to the top and the kids will get better, you know, if they're given those opportunities to progress.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that is actually something that we've got in the works. I have talked to several South Georgia coaches, and we all have the same problem in Southeast Georgia in the rural areas. And I think that is what we need to do, is we need to get, you know, the four, five, six of us that do care about our programs, and we're looking at getting together and, you know, taking one or two weekends a month and hosting some tournaments that won't be USTA sanctioned or anything, but just something to get our kids quality competition.
Well, Bob, you know, USTA, go ahead. I'm sorry. You had something.
No. I just started to say that I think he's on the right track there. I really do.
He is, because, Bob, here's the deal. You know, the USTA, we forget that anyone can play tennis, and they do not own tennis. And, you know, Bob, I just went and got on one of these national committees for junior tennis. I'm finding out the bureaucracy is unbelievable. And it's not that we don't have good people working in these bureaucracies, but Steve Bellamy, you know the guy that runs the Tennis Channel?
Yep.
What an interesting guy he is. Wow, this guy has got so much energy, and he's a brilliant man. But the thing is that he said, I will never forget his analogy of a bureaucracy. And you can compare maybe the bureaucracy at a big university compared when you were at Trinity. You can compare the bureaucracy of a government, the bureaucracy of USTA. And it's not that these people are bad people. It's the point, he says, a bureaucracy is sort of like a house, a real nice house that sort of did everything you needed back in the 60s. And then you started adding on a room here and a room there and a room here and a room there. And then today, if you want a screwdriver, you have to walk through three bathrooms, two kitchens, 18 halls. You get the deal. I mean, it becomes something that just becomes tedious to get to do. And Coach Vonk ought to just get the South Georgia Tennis Association going and have rankings up for the South Georgia Tennis. Just call Coach Wong, just make your own rankings up. They don't have to be USTA rankings.
Nope.
I mean, you know, you can have your own rankings. Bob, we could have a new association. I've heard even some of the people saying, well, maybe we need a rival organization in the United States other than the USTA. Maybe something. We need to do more things local, Bob. You know, it's all bottom up is how things should be done. It's not top down. Again, it's the top people should be saying, there's the bar, Skip Fosbury, get over it any way you want. And he said, oh, okay, I decide I'm going to jump backwards. Well, Coach Wonk, the worst thing you could do is try to just go through the system, I think, and get your players better, because it's not going to happen. You know, and it's unfortunate it's not going to happen. I have some statistics here, Bob, I'd like for you to comment. All right, first of all, high school kids, we have over 340,000. I had that right. I used to quote 450,000. I think that was an old number. But we have over 340,000 kids playing high school tennis, but less than 8% of them play more than five tournaments a year. So we have a lot of kids that play tennis that are not tennis players. Bob, 72% of all professional athletes come out of rural, like Kingsland, Georgia here, and like French Lick, Indiana, and like Greenwood, Indiana, and like Podunk Central, Missouri, or wherever. These places are where the athletes are at. All of these small-town kids need activity, Bob. And I think the USTA maybe misses the boat, and I'll let you comment on it, misses the boat by just pumping into rural, urban areas. Bob, college, I already gave the statistics on the colleges. But, Bob, something is not connecting. We need some kind of grip, tread on our tires, because you know and I know that we have the best facilities of any country in the world. And college is unbelievable, the facilities you have at A&M, or even that we had at Clemson back in those days, or you had at Trinity. So it's not that. So talk about these things a little bit. Your high school system, like, for example, in Texas is a darn good one, isn't it?
Yeah, and one reason it is that, you know, they basically play tennis year-round. They compete year-round. In the fall, they play what's called the team tennis season, where they play other schools and compete against each other as teams. And then in the spring season, they play singles and doubles tournaments, and they compete for a state championship individually as singles and doubles players. And it's a great system.
Bob, what would be wrong with college doing that?
Not a thing. I think that's what really
Randy
ought to happen.
Randy Blumendahl's been on my show at least three or four times, and he always talks about this, that the college season should be – you could – look, Bob, I'm so upset about – what they're getting ready to do, and again, a mandate or whatever pushed through in your colleges next year. They're making no ad pro sets for doubles, 7-7, you play a tie. It's ridiculous. Come on. And you know it, and I know it, and every college coach trying to develop players knows it. But the point is, if you had it in the fall for 10 weeks, you could have your season. You could have a hoochie-coochie show out there. You do anything you want to bring fans. Do it on football weekends. You know, do it on a Friday night before a football game, Sunday afternoon when everything can slow down. And then you have your team season done by Thanksgiving. Then you'd have the grand slam of college tennis. You have a clay court event, an indoor event, the All-American, and the NCAA. Though that would be your grand slam of college tennis. Satellite events would spring off of those. We'd have the best amateur circuit in the world for developing players, Coach McKinley.
Yep.
What do you think?
I love the idea. And, you know, I don't really see why it couldn't be done. I mean, except for it's different. And we've always done it another way. You know, that's.
And people always start at the bottom and look at the problems there might be instead of, what was it, Stephen Covey thing, begin with the end in mind. You look at the top of the mountain and you say, I'm going there. Look, I'm going to have some problems along the way, but this is what we need to accomplish. We need to save college tennis. But Bob, just a couple more things here. You definitely, Texas A&M has been rising very, very quickly. And give you a chance here to have a bit of a commercial for your program and the great Steve Denton you work with there. I know that I would never hesitate, and I don't hesitate ever sending kids to you because of the wisdom that you have in that office there. That would be a good place to put a recorder. No. You know, we couldn't do that because Bob, dang, it would be out on YouTube now. So we better not do that one, but the point is I'm trying to pat you guys on the back for being two of the best coaches I've seen in college tennis. So talk about your program a little bit, where you're at and where you're trying to go and how you're getting there.
Well, we you know, we came in and 7 years ago. We've been here 7 years now, and when we came in, you know, we were about 30 or so in the country, and we have worked real hard to try to recruit players who want to really develop into professional tennis players. That's been our sort of our mindset and our recruiting mantra is that, we're going to treat you as if you want to be a professional tennis player. And we started in our recruiting, we start this way. We try to get Texas players first. We try to get Americans next. And then if we can't, fill our squad and do where we need to go, we will look at some foreign players. But we've been really lucky. Our top six this past year were all Americans. We feel like we're developing these young American players. We were a young team. We had no seniors. We had one junior, and the rest were freshmen and sophomores. And we had a good year, and we were knocking on the door of the top 10. I think the highest we got was 11, and we ended the year at 14. But had a good year and feel like, we're going to, with the entire team back and another recruit or two coming in, we feel like we're gonna be a team to be reckoned with in the next couple of years.
What are the biggest frustrations you have in coaching now as opposed to coaching back in the 70s and 80s at Trinity?
Well, there's no question. That's an easy one. It's all the limitations that are put on us. When I coached at Trinity before, we could practice as much as we wanted. We could play as many matches as we wanted, as many tournaments as we wanted. There were just no limitations. And now, we're limited to 20 hours a week, which includes your physical fitness training. And you can only play a certain number of matches. You only play, a total of 25 dates, including fall and spring. And, that's just not enough. I mean, it's not enough. And when you threw out the stat about Isner being the only player in the top 100, I mean, that's all part of it. It's just really hard to develop, in college tennis to the degree or as fast as we used to be able to develop players because they just don't get enough tennis.
Bob, to your knowledge, is anybody fighting the battle to try to get more matches and more playing time?
No, and that's frustrating because I feel like, that should be a goal of the ITA. And I feel like they take the stance that it's just, that'll never happen or, we've been down that road before and I don't think anybody's doing anything about it. And I really feel our national organization ought to be fighting, very hard for that to see if we can expand.
That's awful. It's just awful. And, Bob, I where I'm at with this. Daggone it. We are not even squeaking, and we're getting buried. And 400 college programs have been dropped. And let me just say one real quick thing. I'm going to go on. We're going to stay on 5 more minutes, Bob, because we're 5 minutes
okay.
late getting started. But we will go off the air on the UR Tennis Network here in a minute. But you can get the show if you'll go back on your iTunes and punch in UR Tennis. We'll be on 5 more minutes here to get the full hour in today. But, Coach McKinley, we have about 5 minutes. And The point is that, again, a squeaky wheel gets you all. If it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. Yes, that's a very, very important fact to live by and to remain with. If something is not right, we need, our associations need to be standing up and saying, look, this is not right. And I do not know if the coaches' association, most of the people are on board with this. I think it might be time to have a association made up of 40 or 50 men's coaches or women's coaches because they're not the same. It's not the same perspective and it's not the same objectives at all, especially if you break it up then into D1, D2, D3, NAIA, and junior college. We have 10 associations, Bob, under the umbrella of the ITA. I don't think you can get anything done with that format. So, would you be in favor of a group, all of the D1 coaches getting together, the men's coaches, and trying to get their voice heard and to get unified in some of these fights?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that would be something exciting that, if that could happen, then, I think who knows what could be accomplished. But you'll never know unless something like that would happen.
Well, what we're doing right now, the proof is in the pudding, as we always say. Right now, what we're doing is failing. It's definitely not working well. And 400 teams drop. We're not developing any players. They're going to barking up the wrong tree if they think they're going to finally get on ESPN 13 or ESPN 15 behind water polo, college bowling, and softball or something. That's just not going. Even if it did happen, it's not going to build a fan base. We need a situation where our kids are trying to get better because they love tennis, and then fans will come. But we're not doing a good job at that. Coach McKinley, any other quick thoughts here? Coach Vonk here, any other quick thoughts by you guys?
No, I just appreciate, your efforts, Chuck, and I know you have a passion for the game, and I have that same passion, and there are other guys around the country, that have that same passion, and as long as there are passionate people out there, then, I think we have a chance to, to right some of the wrongs and improve, things and try to get American tennis back to where, it once was and where it should be. What you said earlier, I mean, we have the facilities, we have the coaches, we have so much. Why isn't it working?
Well, and, I think, Mike Krzyzewski has a book out right now, and he makes the point that one lion leading a herd of deer will be far more successful than one deer trying to lead a herd of lions, because of course the lions would fight with each other and nothing would ever get done. And that's an interesting perspective, but we need teamwork and we need to be working together, and I think it's time to do some of these things. And listen, Bob, if you'll give the great coach Steve Denton my best out there, and Bob, I really, really appreciate you coming on, and we'll do it again real soon, okay?
Sounds great, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. He's just made in America. Made in America. Made in America.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy asking to join us again next Wednesday. We'll be back on at 12 to 1 Eastern Standard Time. Wanted to remind you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day and every minute of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'd like to thank Coach Dan Vonk for hosting the show today here in Camden County, Georgia, and also one of the greatest men and greatest coaches that I've ever met, Coach Bobby McKinley. Keep doing great things out there at A&M, Coach McKinley and Coach Denton. God bless y'all. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.